Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Nunam
Vrata
Snana Bhutadineshvara Samarchito Yasya Grihita Anidhi Pibanti
Yas
Sakya Bharanamritam
Mohur
Vraja, Shtriyas, Sammumuhur, Yad, Astrayah, Nunam Vratasnanam Hute Dineshvara,
Nunam Vratasnanam Hute Dineshvara,
Samarchito Yasya Grihita Panidhi,
Samarchito Yasya Grihita Panidhi,
Pibhanti Yasakya Dharat Mritam Muhur,
Pibhanti Yasakya Dharat Muhur,
Rajasriya Sammumuhur Yadasraya,
Rajasriya Sammumuhur Yadasraya,
Nunam,
Nunam,
Certainly,
certainly,
in the previous birth,
vrata,
vow, snana,
bath,
huta,
sacrifice in the fire,
adina,
by all these,
Ishvara,
the personality of Godhead,
Samarchita,
perfectly worshipped.
He,
certainly.
Asya,
his.
Grihita panidhi, by the married wives. Pibhanti,
relishes.
Yaha,
those who.
Shakhi,
O friend.
Adhara amritam,
the nectar from his lips.
Muhu,
again and again.
Vrajastriya,
the damsels of Vrajabhumi.
Sammuhu,
often fainted.
Yat asraya,
expecting to be favored.
In that way. Translation.
O friends, just think of his wives, whose hands he has accepted,
how they must have undergone vows, baths, fire sacrifices, and perfect worship of the Lord of the universe, to constantly relish now the nectar from his lips by kissing. The damsels of Brajabhumi would often faint just by expecting such favors.
Purport.
Religious rites prescribed in the scriptures are meant to purify the mundane qualities of the conditioned souls, to enable them to be gradually promoted to the stage of rendering transcendental service under the Supreme Lord. Attainment of this stage of pure spiritual life is the highest perfection, and this stage is called Swarup, or the factual identity of the living being. Liberation means renovation from this stage of renovation of this stage of Swarup. In that perfect stage of Swarup, the living being is established in five phases of loving service, one of which is the stage of Madhurya Rasa, or the humor of conjugal love. The Lord is always perfect in himself, and thus he has no hankering for himself. He, however, becomes a master, a friend, a son, or a husband to fulfill the intense love of the devotee concerned. Herein, two classes of devotees of the Lord are mentioned in the stage of conjugal love. One is Swakya and the other is Parakya. Both of them are in conjugal love with the personality of Godhead. The queens at Dwaraka were Swakya,
or duly married wives, but the damsels of Braja were young friends of the Lord while he was unmarried. The Lord stayed at Vrindavan till the age of 16, and his friendly relations with the neighboring girls were in terms of Padakiya. These girls, as well as the queens, underwent severe penances by taking vows, bathing, and offering sacrifices in the fire, as prescribed in the scriptures. Their rites, as they are not an end in themselves, nor are fruit of action, culture of knowledge, or perfection in mystic powers ends in themselves. They are all means to attain to the highest stage of Swarup, to render constitutional transcendental service to the Lord. Each and every living being has his individual position in one of the above-mentioned five different kinds of reciprocal means with the Lord, and in one's pure form of Swarup, the relationship becomes manifest without mundane affinity. The kissing of the Lord, either by his wives or his young girlfriends who aspire to have the Lord as their fiancé, is not of any mundane perverted quality. Had such things been mundane, a liberated soul like Sukadeva would not have taken the trouble to relish them, nor would Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have been inclined to participate in those subjects after renouncing worldly life. The stage is earned after many lives of penance. So here now the women on the roofs of the palaces that are making the point here that the great fortune that is had by the devotees of the Lord, that it is something special, it is not ordinary, it cannot be found just anywhere. So they mention that they have performed great austerities, penances, vows, performed sacrifices. All this has been done by them. But this is not the actual reason that they've come to this platform. This is a medium. As Prabhupada points out, is that these are not an end in themselves. Right? Because if they're an end, then they get you, that's what you want. They are a means. So this means on the conditional platform, we're not dealing with something spiritual. Pure devotion is spiritual. There's nothing mundane about it. So there's a problem, is how to connect the two, because they have nothing to do with each other. This is a dilemma for the living entity. We are conditioned, we're in a material body, we have a material subtle body, but we want to get to the platform of devotion that can only be operated on the platform of pure devotion. There's no in-between. So then the difficulty comes how to connect it, how to bridge this. So then Krishna gives this bridge by performing sadhana bhakti. So in sadhana bhakti, you perform activities that are technically by nature mundane. You bathe, you're clean, you rise early in the morning, you do many different activities. You're using the material body, you're using the material mind. But because they're being done to please the Lord, they give you devotion, they give you bhakti. So now, since those are the medium for bhakti, basically pious activities are the medium for bhakti. They aren't bhakti, but they're the medium. Therefore, we see that only someone who has done great amounts of sacrifice and austerities and vows and given in charity, then may be inclined, when devotional service comes along, to continue such a thing. Right? Now, if you're performing austerities and charity for a purpose, then when devotion comes, it won't give that purpose, there won't be an inclination to do it. Does that make sense? You give in charity because then you're going to get money back, right? You give money this life. I give 1 rupee to a common person, I will get back 1 rupee. I give 1 rupee to someone who claims to be a Brahmin, though they're not, I'll get back 2 rupees. Just that I've respected the principle of respecting Brahmins. I give it to a qualified Brahmin, I get 100,000 rupees back. Right? You give it to, you know, the realized soul, you can't count it. Right? Because you can't compare the two. The exchange rate is not calculated. So, but we do it because of these results. I do a vow because I'm going to get something from it. I do a sacrifice, I'm going to get something from it. So now we have to come to the point where we've given in charity, we've done all these things, we're satisfied, but piety is a habit. Right? Then, when by the Lord's grace, by the grace of the devotees, we come across the devotees in the performance of our pious activities, then we will continue to do pious activities, but now for the Lord. Because you need a medium. Does that make sense? You have to have something to show. You want to show devotion to the Lord. What do you do it with? You do some incense, or some flower, some boga, some nice dress, some nice scents, some prayers. Something is there to show the love through, right? Otherwise you can't. But one can say, no, I'll just sit and think. But still you're using the mind as a medium. Something has to be the medium. So since all we have is something mundane, therefore that becomes the medium. And because Krishna is not interested in mundane, at least it should be that mundane which is the close reflection to the original form of the devotee's show of devotion. Because they have spiritual bodies, spiritual minds and intelligence, spiritual paraphernalia with which to show their devotion. Right? So when we follow the path followed by them, then it becomes nicer. Right? Especially whatever is your deity, you use that form. Right? Like in Vrindavan, then flowers are more important. So we do flowers and nice arrangements like this. In Vaikuntha, then opulence is more important. Therefore you see the jewels and the gold and all that's more important. Many times you see in these mountains where they worship, the deity is on top of a rock, you know, and there's some steps to get up there. And there's nothing around. They may bring some flowers if there happens to be or not, but they offer a solid gold flower. You know, every time you wash it, and if they have some scent, they put that on there. Then the flower has some smell. But they don't have the real flower, they offer gold. Right? But in the Braj worship, then more emphasis is on the flower, not so much on the gold. Right? Gold is nice, but the flower is more nice. It's a nicer medium. It's more suitable as a medium. This makes some sense? So, the piety then, that habit of having performed the pious activities will carry you on when you take up devotional service. Because now what are you going to do when you take up the process of naishkarmya? Okay, in the beginning of devotional service, it's easy. I do the activity, I get the result. At the same time, I get Krishna. Right? You know, rat deka kola becha. Right? I get Krishna and I get my material desires fulfilled. But after a while, then you start to think, why would I be wasting my time on this? Because that's not what's going on in Braja. That you're trying to please Krishna, that's going on there. But that's exclusively what's going on there. Right? But if you, the rules and regulations, then there's some fulfilling one's own desire. But still it's spiritual. But here we're dealing with, we're getting the material results of our pious activities, and we're wanting to enjoy them. So then this becomes, after a while, it loses its taste. In the beginning it's very enthusiastic, one gets position, one gets facility, one gets money, one gets recognition, whatever it is that we're interested in, whatever is that opulence. But after a while, because it is mundane, it starts to lose its taste. And then if we reflect and we see the only thing that actually gives the taste is the devotion in which that service was rendered, not the fruit of the service that was rendered. Does that make some sense? So now, why will you keep doing the activity unless you are really fixed that you want to please Krishna? But until that comes, then the tendency is because of habit of performing pious activities, you continue to do it even though there's not the interest in the result. Does that make sense? Means you have to have a motive also for doing something, right? Nothing's not done without a motive, right? Whether that motive is to please Krishna or that motive is to please ourself. By motive, we act. Because without need, there's no action. Right? When you have a need, you act. No need, no act. It's very simple. Right? Many times you wonder, why I'm not doing it? I know I should do it, because it hasn't become a need yet. Right? There's still another need. That's why you're doing other things. But when what you want to do is what you need, you do it. Right? The devotees of Vrindavan, their need is to please Krishna, so all they do is please Krishna. Right? The Karmakandi wants to enjoy the heavenly plants, that's his need, therefore he performs the sacrifice. Right? The Jnani needs to get out of the material world, therefore they perform their austerities and they cultivate their knowledge. That's why a lazy person, or a fool, is never glorified, because they don't do anything. So it's only by action you get something. So that's why the man in passion is better than the man in ignorance. You would say the man in ignorance, he doesn't do anything, he has no real desires, so therefore he would seem to be more glorious than the passionate person who's active and dynamic and going out there and fulfilling his own mundane needs. No, the man in passion's better. Because now you just have to change his goal, he's already active. While the man in ignorance, you have to create a goal and create an activity. So he's farther behind. Does that make sense? Right. So, therefore, that piety, that pious activity, takes one through. That's the advantage of it. Of course, we have to remember, we have to, what do you call it? These, as Kadamba Kananda reminded us the other day, we always have to put in these, what's it, caveat or caveat? Caveat means that make it clear, right? Exactly what you're trying to express, because otherwise we get into the tangent. Sometimes we lose it. Is that the point? Is devotion comes from devotion. So even you don't have pious activities, this that. If one acts in devotion, that's one's desire. One will get Krishna. But in those moments when one is not Krishna conscious, the tendency will be towards non-devotional, non-pious activities. Right? That's the purpose of sadhana, is to regulate. So when we have this habit of regulation, and the regulation is in activities of the mode of goodness, then the farthest we fall is that. Like once I remember, it was funny. I think it was in 77. Prabhupada wanted to give sannyas to Bhakti Churu Maharaj. And he had only joined the year before. So then some of the other big swamis, then they were thinking, oh, he's so new, he's so young, he's so this, he's so that. You know, we don't know, maybe he'll fall down. And Prabhupada said, yes, even if he falls down, he'll fall down to the mode of goodness. Kind of like, he's not like you guys, right? So that's the whole point, is that then you're going from transcendence to goodness. Your bad day, you're in the mode of goodness. Good day in transcendence. So that's easier than, you know, the roller coaster of good day is transcendence, bad day is passion or ignorance. You know, it's a great strain on the mind, on the senses, on the nerves. Especially the nerves can get you, you know. Because, you know, having to go convert back and forth is very difficult. So that's why it's recommended this. Because both it's by that habit. Because otherwise something's not useful if it's not useful in devotional service. You know, we were discussing, Maharaj and I were discussing the other day, is that the non-devotees, many of them are very intelligent, very observative, very practical, get things done, dynamic. You know, you can go on and on and on mentioning qualities. But there are just so many zeros. Right? There's no Krishna there. You know, we were laughing. Yeah, the man comes into the office and I want to show you my resume of zeros. You know, so many zeros I have here. You know, like that. So, but it's when you put Krishna, then it becomes useful. So that's the idea, is that if one has regulation and has these good habits, they themselves are zeros, but when you put Krishna in front of it, they become a great advantage.
Well, if you know your zeros are, you know, laziness, you know, jealousy, envy, you know, all these kind of things, then you put a one in front of it, then it's improved, but still it has a tendency to hold you back. Right? Attachment, of course, to pious activities will also hold you back. Right? So many people don't become devotees because of their piety. I know certain communities, if the community is in India, there's not one person from that community who joins the temple. They'll all chant, they'll all do everything, they'll never join the temple. Because they're so attached to their piety. And their life, because of that piety, is so nice, there's no anxiety, so they never think of moving into the temple. You take the same community, put them in the West, they join. Like in that community, only one person from that community who, is a devotee, joined in the West. Like that. And all those other temple devotees, you know, from Mayapur or Russia, you know, someplace else that is, you know, expanding devotees around the world. So, attachment to pious activities will also hold us back. So that's why Prabhupada points out is because of their pious activities, then having that as a habit and the medium, then they come up or they've taken up devotional service, and then they progress very dynamically. But it's not an end in itself. This always has to be remembered. Sometimes devotees also get caught up, is that we're trying very hard to perform our sadhana, and it's right, and whatever is not sadhana is wrong. And so for our own conviction, we have to make this very cut and dried, you know, it's good or bad. You know, it's like you go to heaven or hell, you know, like this. And so then if someone's not able to maintain the standard or has a difficulty in the standard, then immediately, you know, we're out there with our rocks ready to throw them. You know, but the difficulty comes is that attachment to that piety, we might forget what devotional service is. Right? Because it's the service that was rendered through the medium of that sadhana that was useful. The sadhana itself, so many people do things. I mean, the animals are austere, right? They stand outside in the rain, the sun, the wind, right? It's one of the big austerities of a vanaprastha. Right? The beginning he moves out and lives in a hut. But with time he just starts spending time outside, exposing himself to the sun and the wind and the rain and the cold and the heat, until he doesn't need a house. He just lives outside. Right? So that's one of the methods of austerity. But the animals are already like that. That's why animals are elevated to human life, because they're austere. Right? You know, I mean, it's one could find better ways to perform one's austerity, you know, than, you know, being one of the local dogs or something. But, you know, but that's why they progress, because they're austere. Life is austere. So therefore, we can see austerity is not the main thing. Sadhana regular is not the main thing. That is being done for Krishna. That's what's the main thing. That's what's special. So then we see is, then if that's the case, then what's going on in the spiritual world must also be coming from a completely different platform. Right? The wives of Krishna in Dwarka, the gopis, they're kissing Krishna. But it's not like this mundane kissing. They're not kissing for their own purpose. They're kissing Krishna to please Krishna. Because you have modes of rasa. And to express, each rasa has its own particular, uniqueness. Like the cowherd boys, then they wrestle with Krishna. They fight with Krishna. They challenge Krishna. They steal his lunch. You know, like this. They run around after each other. They copy frogs, you know, on the ground, or shout into wells, right? But that's one rasa. Mother Jashoda doesn't do that. Right? She doesn't steal his lunch. She's the one that made the lunch. Right? She doesn't go around shouting into wells and stuff like that. You know, that's the kind of, but they can do that. You know, if kids go over and shout in a well, everyone will just laugh, you know? But if you see some grown up adult women go over shouting into a well, you start to think, wow, what's going on here?
Maybe we should contact the Grihastha Council. we got some live ones on our hands, right? You know, so it'll be weird. You know, it'll be strange. But, you know, but if they're sitting there and taking Krishna, putting him on their lap, crying, even though he's completely grown up, or Lord Balaram, right, 125 years old, Lord of Dwarka, great king, everything, comes home to Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda picks him up, puts him on her lap, starts crying, patting him on the head. No one will go, hey, he's the king. No, she'll go, ah, it's his mother. You know, what to do? You know, no one will say anything like that. So each rasa has its medium. So therefore, from the conjugal rasa, then kissing, embracing, these things are mediums for showing that rasa. Right? There's a certain intensity through which each rasa attains its perfection. Right? And the coward boys are sitting there, being nice boys in front of their mother Yashoda, and behaving themselves and that. Still, they look at Krishna, they still bump each other and poke each other when Mother Yashoda's not looking. But the manifestation of rasa is not as full as when they're out in the field, there's no parents around, nobody watching what they're doing, they can go nuts and yell and scream and roll on the ground. Then it attains its intensity. Right? So it's fullness. So in the same way, then each rasa, when Mother Yashoda is feeding Krishna, holding Krishna, bathing Krishna, you know, making these kind of arrangements, then it attains its fullness. Right? The conjugal rasa also, through the kissing, through the embracing, it attains its fullness. So it's just a medium through which to express that love for Krishna. But they're not trying to get something back. The gopis aren't kissing Krishna so then he'll bite them or something. You understand? They're not doing it to increase what they're going to get back. Does this make sense? Because the material world, that's how it works. You progress something so that the other one will progress. Right? That's the rule. But that's not why the gopis are doing. That's not what Krishna is doing. They're doing to taste just that interaction. It's just a medium through tasting the love that they have for each other. And that's just the medium. Right? Just like when you eat, you have a preparation you like. Someone likes the sweet, someone the salty, someone the fried things, someone the drink, someone like this. So what you like, that has that medium. Right? You like salty things. So then salty can be sabji, it can be rice, it can be dal, it can be chapatis. There's mediums through which salt can be tasted. You like sweet, so it could be a gulab jamun, a rasgulla, sandesh, sweet rice. There are mediums through which sweetness can be tasted. Right? If I just give you, you know, what do you like? You like salty or sweet? And you say, salty. And then I take out a spoon of salt and put it in your hand. Enjoy! You know, it's kind of like, you know, okay, you know, it's like time to call the Grihastha Council again, you know. So it's, you know, it's something, it's not right. There has to be a medium. So that affection, conjugal affection, must come through something, right? The parental affection must come through something. So these are the natural things that Krishna's created. And they're perfect, they work. No one doubts them. Right? No one has a doubt about the rasas and about what they do. Whether you want to get involved or not, that's another thing. But no one has a doubt. Right? That's not why we came here. We didn't come here because we doubted the five rasas. We came here because we doubted who's supposed to enjoy them. Right? You know, our mistake is we're going to enjoy the five rasas rather than Krishna's going to enjoy it. So the point is then through service one enjoys. Because we see here, we don't serve, we don't enjoy. Right? If you really think about it, what you do doesn't create the enjoyment. It's the thought that you're going to get something from it, or the thought that you've gotten what you've wanted, that you get some enjoyment. Does that make some sense? If you really think about it, really analyze, that's what you get out of something. Is that I think this will make me happy. So getting it, you become happy. Because otherwise you take any activity and if it's in the wrong mood, you don't like it. Right? The man gives a woman a very nice present, like a diamond ring. Because of affection, then she accepts it and it enhances the relationship. She doesn't like the guy, she won't accept the ring. Because she doesn't want to have any relationship with the guy. So therefore, the ring means relationship. So therefore, she doesn't want it.
Unless, of course, she really doesn't like the guy and she wants to mess him up. Then she'll, you know, have a court case, get the ring, and then enjoy that I got it without him, without the relationship. You know, that's another thing. You know, but that's a different rasa. Those are, you know, those are the secondary rasas. You know, horror and, you know, all those kinds of things. You know, like that. But rasa nonetheless. Some taste must be there. So then, right? Does this make some sense? So it's different. That's the thing. It's got nothing to do with what goes on in material. Material world is a reflection of what's there. But what's there is not, has anything to do with what's here. You know? That's very important. So, therefore, the gopis don't do things because they're going to get something out of it. That's what's special about them. The queens, it's 50-50. But even that, it's just to give pleasure to Krishna. Right, but the Brajavasis, no, it's completely just to please Krishna. So therefore, it's a completely different concept. And then the evidence for that Prabhupada gives is otherwise Sukadeva Goswami, who's a liberated soul, wouldn't be interested, and Lord Chaitanya, who's taken sannyas, wouldn't be interested. So they're interested. So that means it must not be mundane. It must be something special. Right. So then. Basically, we see that attaining pure devotional service is what is our goal. To do that, then we have to perform activities that are pleasing to Krishna. Right? It means that we're doing the activity to please Krishna, and it's in some way connected to Krishna. This is what we have to do. But the activity of itself is not what's special. That is done for Krishna. Right? And we shouldn't forget that. Sometimes we become, I say, we can't see the forest for the trees. We become so absorbed in the service, we can't see that it's the service is a medium to please Krishna. And we might even forget about Krishna and do the activity. Right? Prabhupada gives the example of the man, the Pujari in Puri, who used to bring water for Jagannath's bath every day. But at the time of death, he was thinking, oh, who's going to bring the water? He didn't think of Jagannath. So he's saying is, even though he's thinking of the service, that's nice, but he didn't think of Jagannath, so he didn't attain perfection. Like that. And so then, yeah. And the original form of service, or rasa, we should not confuse that it has any mundane element. Right? There's nothing mundane. It's real. Right? So because we know mundane rasa, therefore, we start using that, but in a pious way, to please Krishna. But eventually, it's got to switch that we know that transcendental rasa is different than material rasa. Then we can bridge. Otherwise, we'll get stuck here. Right? If whatever you're attached to, you'll get stuck with. If you're attached to piety, you get stuck in the material world. If you're attached to rules and regulations, you'll go to Vaikuntha. Right? You're only attached to Krishna and his pleasure, you go to Braja. But to get to that platform, you have to have the piety and the regulation to as a medium. So one has to find that balance. Any questions or comments?
If I understood any activity, even though morally because they're sinful or bad, if he's offered for Krishna, transforming something that he accepted with pleasure. I was thinking in puja, he wanted to offer Krishna reparative. Mm-hmm. He wanted to offer some seva to sensual enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Or Vimaki Jalasanda, and Krishna was pleased with that. Mm-hmm. But the Prabhupada Maharaj, Chief Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was able to offer some seva. And the Lord accepted him, so mm-hmm. he should be considered bad.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Could you hear? He's making a comment is that because we were discussing on the piety, he was making the point that impiety also can be and used in the Lord's service as long as it's for Krishna's pleasure and it's something he'll accept. You know, it's according, just like we see, gave the example of Kubja, then after being, how do you say?
Enhanced,
or she attained beatitude. Yeah, straightened out by Krishna. Then she became very beautiful. So then, how do you say? she wanted to reciprocate with Krishna by offering some mundane sense gratification. But it was directed at Krishna. So then it's considered conjugal rasa with Krishna, but samanya, it's considered ordinary. Like that. It's not glorified. I mean, it's that is connected to Krishna, but one moves on. The queens are higher than that because they're looking for Krishna's pleasure, and the damsels of Braja are considered the highest. You know, because Kubja was wanting to please Krishna, but she will get her own pleasure. You know, like that. So she wanted to enjoy with Krishna. And not because men like these things, and therefore then she thought she could make herself available. Or Bhima's killing our Jarasandha, that was cheating. Or so many were cheating, killing Duryodhana, killing Karna, like this. They were all, so many were cheating. You know, Yudhishthira's lying. So sometimes it is. Krishna does this just to point out that it's his pleasure that really means something. So that doesn't mean now we should go up and take up any old sinful activities, you know, like that. But it means that what is sanctioned by Krishna, what is sanctioned by Shastra, then that is there. That's why one needs the example. To establish what is correct, then one has to have what do the Vedas say. Then from the Vedas, what are the scriptures written on the Vedas? What do they state? Then you have the third thing is what do the great personalities, what did they do as example? What was their lifestyle? How did they apply the scriptures? Right? So then, taking from that, then we see what works for us. Right? So there are times when devotees, that means original days, I think, devotees didn't have any flowers. Right? They were used to go hop over the fence to the neighboring, I think, cemetery and to pick up some choice, you know, bouquets and stuff like that and bring it back for the deities. I'm not sure how long that went on for, but it happened. Huh? Not so. So these things happen. So as long as it works for Krishna, it works. You know, some people use the change-up. It worked for a time. But then it stopped working. So to continue using it, it wasn't service to Krishna. It was a loss. Krishna's interest was hampered. At one point, it increased it. So that's the whole point is, you have to see, you can't get attached to the activity. What is pleasing to Krishna, what is working, that's what's done. But working means Krishna's standard of working, not our standard. That's always the point. You always have to start from the scripture, right? The Veda is given by Krishna. Those means Krishna's standards, as given to us in our literatures, as given, exemplified by the Acharyas, that's what we choose from. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not our standard. We apply our standard on it, it's temporary, and Krishna is not temporary, so it won't work. See, because when you do something for Krishna, that pleasure, that interaction is eternal. It lasts eternally. The taste he gets from it is eternal. So if you use your own mundane standards, it's temporary. So then it won't last. How it will please Krishna eternally. So that's why you always have to use Krishna's standards, even though we may apply to time, place, and circumstance in a variety of ways, it still has to be Krishna's standard. If we use mundane standards or modern standards, it will fail. Right? It has to fail. So we have to use the eternal standards, though we apply them on mundane things. Does that make sense? So, yeah, that was a good point.
It's like, if I heard you correctly, you were mentioning how the different activities that we do aren't themselves spiritual, like in Sadhana. They're just a means to offer something. So, I want you to understand the context of activities like regularly chanting and hearing Krishna Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. How do we use
them? Yeah, okay. This is a very good point. So we made the point that the activities we're performing aren't specifically spiritual, but they're a medium for the spiritual desire. So then the doubt comes up, is then what about the activities of chanting the holy name, hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, living in the Dham, serving the devotees. So those themselves aren't activities of sadhana bhakti. Right? Those are Bhagavat bhakti. We as sadhakas practice them, but they themselves are on the transcendental platform. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a distinction. You have five kinds of activities. You have those activities that are purely transcendental. Right? So those are the activities that are recommended that we do always. Right? That's what Krishna says. You just surrender to me. That's the first option. You just surrender, take up this Bhagavat process. If you can't do that, then he says, then you take up regulated devotional service. That means the gap between your surrender and the reality of your conditioned nature, then sadhana bhakti takes that up. Right? Does that make sense? Then, if there's still a gap, there's still things outside of the Bhagavat and sadhana bhakti, then that's where the Vedic varnashram comes in. Because that deals with your senses, your emotions, your economics, your desire to get out of here, you know, all that kind of stuff. So then that comes in. But that's kind of like the limit that it goes. Within that, then there are the deals of morality and sensuality, those kind of things. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha come in. But as long as they're authorized by the scriptures, then they're favorable. Right? It means the Pancharatrik will be more direct, because that's deity worship. Right? And there's things that are more directly connected. Then you have things like taking a bath. It's not necessarily, you could take your bath to go to the heavenly planets. You could take your bath because you just want to be clean so that people don't criticize you. You know, you could be taking your bath to get liberation. So many things you could be doing. But it is not against devotional service. Right? Then you have, so that's the third level. So down to the third level we accept. Then the fourth level means those things that aren't against the scriptures, but they're not favorable towards the destination you want to go to. Right? We want to go to Vrindavan. So there's certain many elements, because Vrindavan is past Vaikuntha. Right? So that means up to Vaikuntha, what we do and what the Vaikunthavasis do is the same. Does that make sense? Like, we're catching a bus outside the front gate, we're going to Calcutta. I'm going to Calcutta, someone else is going to Krishnagar. Same bus, so up to Krishnagar we're following the same path. Then they stop and we continue going. Does that make sense? So, therefore, what we do to get us to up to the pious level is the same thing that the karmis do. What we do to get us to the platform of liberation is what the impersonalists do. What we do to get us up to Vaikuntha is what the Vaikunthavasis do. What we do to get us to Dwarka or Mathura is the same. But we don't stop there, we keep going. So there's certain activities that will tend to get you off the bus. So those things we don't do. So then basically Rukmini Dhyanam means meditation on Rukmini, Puja, Dwarka Dhyanam, Rukmini Puja, the wearing of these Kusa rings, the use of mudras in the actual offering of items. We use them for purification, we don't use them to offer. Does that make sense? It's a technical point, so don't get wrong. If you see pujaris using mudras, it's not wrong. But because they're using it to purify the item, they're not using it to offer the item. Vaikuntha worship, you use a mudra to offer the item. Like you want to offer the lamp, you should first show the mudra, then you pick up the lamp. Right? Like that. So only certain authorized mudras, the grash mudra, come sit, or the eat, these things we use. But other than that, we don't. Swagatam, offer prayers, these things. But otherwise, then those are left. Right? And putting nyas on your body, that also we don't do. So those ones are unfavorable to devotional service for us, Vaikuntha bhakti, Vraja bhakti. But they're not against the scriptures. They're not against devotional service, but they're not favorable to Vraja Bhakti. That's the fourth category. That's dropped. The fifth category means sinful activities and stuff. That's useless. You don't engage that. Does that make sense? They're opposed to devotional service. So those things are given up. So the first category then is that's what you should be doing. But because we can't do it, we're not doing impure devotion, we're still doing it. It is the means when we chant the holy name and we're chanting, let's say, a namabhas, where the name's not pure, right? That means for us we don't perceive it as pure. It's our consciousness is not pure, so therefore he doesn't reciprocate with us in full. But the name is the pure name. You understand? The name is Krishna. You don't have impure Krishna and pure Krishna and kind of pure Krishna. The holy name is Krishna. But because we're in mundane, we're in covered consciousness, we perceive or don't perceive the name. So therefore, Krishna says he'll reciprocate with you as you surrender. So our surrender is not great, so therefore his reciprocation is not great. So the result you get then is less. But when you understand this is Krishna, he reciprocates with you fully as Krishna. Does that make sense? Otherwise, how is it that the name has effect on the other person? Right? The devotee, the Harinam goes by, right? And there's a bunch of rascals standing on the side of the road. And one of them, the best of the rascals, then he goes, Hare Krishna, yeah. And all his friends hear this Hare Krishna. They make spiritual advancement hearing him mock the devotees. Because it is Krishna. That's the point. So that's in a different category. So we're not dealing with the mundane. But we're still mundane. Therefore we need the support of the Pancharatrika and the Vedic systems to bring us to that platform where we don't require. That's why at the stage of what Prabhupada says here, Srup, at that point one doesn't need. Sadhana Bhakti is not required anymore. So all these things don't need to be followed. For example, yes, but otherwise for one's own advancement, no. But generally the devotees in our line, unless they're behaving as avidhuts, then they always follow. Like that. They always. Like that.
Maharaj, so the purification is like an internal switch to what we can offer. If we use it for purification, chanting,
yeah. It
becomes...
The point is so then we have the sadhana and we have the pure devotion and we're trying to get to there. So then that, and trying to endeavor to use that for the Lord, then is that like the switch? Is that the thing that is of use? Yes, that's the what's important. We see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, then the Brahman, after he worshipped his Shaligram and performed his worship, then the results of all the activities and whatever he had, he offered to the Lord. Right? So there's two methods. One is that after performing the activity you offered, the other is before you perform the activity it's offered. In the one where you offer before, you're not interested in the result. The one where it's after, many times we're interested in the result, but we use it for the Lord. Like that. So there's also varying degrees there. Maybe purely we want for a particular situation to get a facility so that it can be used for the Lord. So therefore it's there. So we're not interested in result. But the idea is it's already given that when the result comes, it will be the Lord's. Right? Or it's after the result comes, then it's offered. So in any case, is that desire to offer it to the Lord, whether it comes before or after or during the activity, then it's all good. It's all perfect.
So in our conditioned state, we've seen that all the any reflection in the mind, any activity is always with ourselves, is in relationship to ourselves. But in pure devotion, this self is given up. It's almost like, we're becoming mindless robots because everything is for Krishna and there's nothing for the self.
Mm-hmm.
So where is the individuality?
Uh-huh. Okay. So,
Here we have then the point is made that we're giving everything up for Krishna. That is the platform of pure unalloyed devotion. Therefore the term unalloyed is used. Then the doubt comes is then where is the individual identity? So then it becomes almost like impersonal. So because if there is no identity, if there is no motive, then how do you create an individual that interacts with an individual? Because rasa is tasted by interaction with individuals, right? So this is, how does that work? So this is the principle of achinta beda aveda tattva. That's why our philosophy is very hard to understand, right? Other philosophies are easy because they only have one element. They don't have a seeming inconsistency. It's either all one or there's two. Or it's one, but it's got a specific means how you define it as one. It's got some special quality or specialness to it. Right? Or it can be one, you can look at it as one, or you can look at it as two. Right? So all of them seem to have a consistency that makes it very easy to understand. Right? But our philosophy is it's simultaneously one and different. Because before Braja, you're dealing with expansions of Krishna. Right? So that particular line will have a particular consistency. Does that make sense? You follow a particular line, it's consistent all the way through. But the point is Krishna is the source of everything. Right? So that means everything is reposed in Him. That means all inconsistencies find their resolution in Krishna. So if you want to follow Braja Bhakti, you have to be able to accommodate that something simultaneously going to be one way and another at the same time. That's why this thing of Naishkarmi and other things are very difficult. Because we follow it with it's doing something without a goal. The Mayavadis, you go to a Mayavadi conference, they're always talking Nishkam Karma Yoga. They're always talking Naishkarmya. Because they know that detached work gets you liberation. At the same time, they know detached work will get you the material fruit that a karmi is looking for. So the same preaching works for the karmis and the jnanis. But they're still doing because there's a motive for what they want to get. Right? But now we're asking them to do that only to please Krishna. So now we're cutting out that we're going to act in a detached way, but eventually we're going to get something for it. Right? We're only going to please Krishna. So now, then the problem comes is then identity. You know, who are we? Because that rasa, okay, there's the oneness we've mentioned, but to taste it, there must be the difference. Right? For anything to work, though, if we look at it, actually everything works only on the Braja principles. Right? Means you have two people, they're different, therefore there's rasa. But if there's no common element, they don't interact. So you simultaneously have to have a difference and a commonality to make rasa work. Right? Or you take food. The food and our tongue are different, but there's a commonality that is something that the tongue can appreciate. Right? And except, of course, babies. They're in a unique category. Anything can relate to the tongue. But other than that, but it has to be something that you can relate to. Right? So then there's a commonality. So it all works on this. Because all the principles that the whole creation works on are coming from Braja. But because when they come out, their flavor may be so different, seemingly different, that it's identified differently. So in Braja, then identity is there. But that identity is so intimate that there's difference enough that there is rasa, but the intimacy is so close that the oneness is also there. So that's one element. Another is then we're looking at it that the argument itself, the doubt itself, then has a principle of fruit of gain. That unless I'm getting something from it, how will there be interchange? If I'm only doing it for Krishna, then I become a mindless person. But you could have, in your own determination, made the determination, I want to please Krishna. And that is one's individuality. So now it's a matter of, how do you want to please Krishna? Because Krishna can be pleased in any variety of ways. So I want to please Krishna in this particular rasa. So that's how I'm going to show my individuality of love for Krishna. You understand? So therefore, there is that oneness. But in Braj, that oneness is very strong. Like that. When Sanatana Goswami is describing the aprakrita pastimes. Because generally what we always hear about is the prakat pastimes. So when he at one point explains aprakat pastimes. But it's like viewing it through water. And that water is rasa. The rasa is so thick, it's completely different. It's nothing to do with anything that we're dealing with here. Here it's empty voidness. It's dead. And because the souls walk or move around, then radiating from the souls, you get a little bit of possibility of exchange if every conditions are right. But in the Lord's pastimes, it's not like that. It is rasa. There's nothing else. You don't have the tatasta element manifest. So even in Gokul, that tatasta element is manifest, that the devotees in Sarup and the demons and others, still whatever is left, either grossly is in the demons or those in the platform of Sarup, there's still that slight fragrance of the mundane, right? The attachment to piety and not. That's why one group of gopis couldn't go to the rasa dance, because that fragrance is still enough that it kept them back. And this is, there's nothing there. Right? The example is given of the hing box. You wash the hing box, there's not one speck of the hing inside. It still smells like hing. So in the same way, you come to Sarup, still the fragrance of having been in the material world is there. You have to burn it off by association with the eternal associates. But unless you have that determination to get there, they're not going to associate. They're there, but you don't take advantage. Because of the tatasta nature. Well, it's nice. You know, the facilities in Braj are nice. We're not in the material world. Right? Here we remember Krishna because things go bad. Right? You know, like that. Things go bad. But you get to the platform of Bhava Sadhana. Nothing's bad. It's the spiritual world. You got a spiritual body, doesn't get sick, not fatigued, not hunger, not thirsty. All the paraphernalia you're dealing with is all spiritual. There's no inebrities. So very easily you could become distracted and just, it's a nice life. The household life, the gopis are going through, and that is fine. It's great. There's no problems. So they may not try to make that endeavor to develop the love for Krishna. So they don't, therefore, take up association with the Nitya Siddhas. That's how we got here. Because in, what do you call it? Were you not attracted?
Repelled.
Not repelled, not the opposite. Indifference. You can't remain as indifferent. Because the tatasta has to either be under the shelter of one or the other, internal or external. So therefore, indifference turns into inimical. So that's how then one falls into the material world. But because you don't have any material experience or desire, therefore we come in as Lord Brahma. And then from there, you know, by the looks of it, it's downhill from there, right? Theoretically, from Brahma, you could go back. You could figure out this is crazy and go back. But, you know, seeing that we look around and the place is full of living entities, therefore we can understand a lot didn't figure it out then. You know? Does that make sense? So that simultaneous is that the oneness of simply trying to please Krishna at the same time as wanting to please through a particular rasa. So that's where it creates the individuality. That you want to please Krishna in that rasa, that's the individuality. That creates the form. Yam kama krodha sahaja pranayadi piti. That creates the form. Right? But that intimacy is so close that the difference is very minimal. Like that. That's why the Vrindavan pastimes are the most intense. Any activity, rasa intensifies as you break down the barriers of difference. Enough is maintained to tell the difference, but the more it's broken down, then the more less. You know, when kids play, they don't see any difference. It's spontaneous. So therefore, then they taste that friendship rasa so greatly. Does that make sense? So that's the.
What about a devotee like Yudhisthira? He's in his swarup, right?
Yeah.
But he seems to be more attached to being honest, to, you know, to performing dharma, stuff like that, more than he's attached to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Is that the nature of the Dwaraka devotees?
Uh-huh. So doubt comes up then that we say that pleasing Krishna is what's important, but we see from the example of Yudhishthira Maharaj that he's always attached to Dharma. So, but he's said to be a pure devotee, so it throws a doubt that either he's not a pure devotee or pure devotional service, I mean, is not connected to having affection for Krishna. It's not the important element. Because otherwise, then, you know, how do you decide? Are you get into the rules more, or you throw the rules out the window? You have to be able to apply it in your life, right? It has to be practical. So this doubt then arises. So then Yudhishthira Maharaj, then we have to, the Pandavas are special devotees. Prabhupada mentions that Arjuna is only in Krishna's pastimes within the the realm of Mahavishnu. You know what I'm saying? So wherever Krishna is, it's the spiritual world, but he's only within the prakat pastimes, we could say. You don't find Arjuna in the aprakat pastimes in Goloka. He is only here in these pastimes. That's the thing. He mentions that. So he's always with Krishna in the material world. Right? So then it would appear that the Pandavas have a special relationship, that Krishna's pastimes in the material world then they take part in. Because you don't have to go out and you don't have a battle of Kurukshetra. You don't have to kill all those demons. So Arjuna would have nothing to do. You know, it's just like you have the problem where you have Hanuman when he comes back to the, you know, Ayodhya and all that, everything's running nice, all the servants are there, everything's going on. Hanuman has nothing to do. So his anxiety, he goes to Sita Devi and says, "You please give me a service." I mean, she's thinking, and all services are fulfilled. Then she thinks, ah, yes, when Ramachandra yawns, no one snaps their fingers in front of his mouth. So he says, "So you can do that." So then he was very happy. He went and, you know, situated himself, you know, somewhere in some column or some ledge somewhere, just sitting, waiting. And then one time Ramachandra started to yawn. He jumps down and immediately starts snapping his fingers as quickly as he can. So then, you know, Ramachandra's yawning. He's snapping his fingers. You know, Ramachandra's still yawning. He's still snapping his fingers. And this is going on for minutes and then hours. And then the devotees are getting worried. Something's wrong with Ramachandra. No one yawns all day. So they bring in the physicians. They bring in this and that. And no one can figure it out. And then finally at the end, it's understood is the reason Ramachandra's yawning is one, to give an opportunity for Hanuman to render service, but because he's rendering that service, he's reciprocating. So therefore, then it's figured out, then Sita Devi said, okay, I'll give you another service. Just stop snapping your fingers. So, in other words, is what would the Pandavas do? Right? We see that Uddhava and Ugrasena and all these other personalities, they sit in the sabha with Krishna, they discuss with Krishna, they have programs with Krishna. But right, you know, but Arjuna just goes to Dwarka to steal Subhadra. You know, other than that, you know, you don't hear, they're in Hastinapur. So it's special pastimes that they're in that are for the Lord's preaching mission, you know, to come and establish Dharma. So then in those pastimes, then many times they'll take up things that it seemingly covers to others their devotion to the Lord. Just like in Vrindavan, then, you know, they're going out to worship the demigods. Radharani's deity is the sun god. Right? But that doesn't mean that Krishna's are the real deity. So these things are only there as something to create. Means if Yudhishthira wasn't fixed in the truth like that, then you wouldn't have even the demons trusting him. Right? When the exile with Virat was over, and that battle happened where Duryodhana went with his armies to steal Virat's cows, they did that to flush out the Pandavas. So Arjuna came out and fought with them. So now they went back and they very, you know, happily said, "See, you know, you came out before the time was over." And then, but Bhishma was not quite so sure, because his point is Yudhishthira would never come out, he would never break his word. But then Duryodhana said, "No, but they did." So then there was a whole thing, astrological discussion, and they couldn't come to a conclusion. So the conclusion was, ask Yudhishthira, because Yudhishthira will never lie. And so Yudhishthira, to save himself 14 years in the forest, by lying, he'd never do it. So they know that if he says the time was up, it was up. So then Yudhishthira said it was up. It had just been up just some very short time before. So like that. Or the demons. Krishna, that's one of his qualities mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, is that he's dependable. You know, it's like you know how he's going to act. So the demons, it says they sleep peacefully at night because they know they haven't done anything wrong, so Krishna won't come and attack them. They do something wrong, Krishna will come and get them. But if they do nothing wrong, Krishna is going to leave them alone. So it says, therefore they can sleep peacefully at night knowing that he's not going to come and get them. Because, you know, after a while they start to figure it out. Somehow this Vishnu guy always gets all their leaders, you know. But they know that they've done something, you know. Therefore, you know, they steal the earth, they do this, they do that. So then he comes. But if they don't do anything, he leaves them alone. So you need that element. It adds to the rasa, that truthfulness, dharma. Plus, Krishna comes to establish dharma. He comes to get rid of adharma, because that's useless. That gets in the way of those who could be pious. You establish dharma, then those who are may not be so pious will be pious, those who are pious will be pious, those who are pious and will take up devotional service then can serve through that medium. But actually he comes to associate with the devotees. But because the idea is to get more people to become devotees, therefore that piety platform is the bridge between impious and devotion. Right? It's a useful bridge. Does that make sense? So then he is very important for establishing dharma. But that's why Mahabharata is considered not the full manifestation. It's not the full explanation. Bhagavatam is. So then we see the first canto is actually Mahabharata. But it's Mahabharata where you see Krishna. You see that they're devotees. Because in the Mahabharata, it says they're devotees. It always talks about the Supreme Lord. But it's in between hundreds and hundreds of verses that you can get distracted by. Well, in the Bhagavatam, every verse you understand. Right? Here we have so many conversations could be there. Right? The ladies talking on the roof. But these are the ladies talking on the roof that we're discussing now. These conversations are taken. But in the Mahabharata, then these might be there, one verse, but there'll be so many where they're talking about other things. Right? Then it establishes, you know, the proper religious nature of the women, their attitude, their femininity, their all these different qualities. Here is showing how femininity is engaged in the Lord's service. But there it shows the religious principle of it, plus its connection. But it, the proportion is out of balance. Does that make sense? Yeah. You want to say something?
So when Krishna left, then Yudhisthira didn't consider it very important anymore.
Yeah, so that's a very good
point. Quiet hearing, mm-hmm. wound everything up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But that's wasn't good. Full effect.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That means Janaimas Prabhu made the point that to prove that his piety wasn't piety for piety's sake is that as soon as Krishna had left the planet, immediately Yudhishthira said, okay, now it's time to go. So they put Parikshit Maharaj on the throne and left for the forest. So actually they were only doing it to please Krishna. But it's just part of the pastimes. Yes.
You had mentioned that there's pure devotional service and you can engage in pure devotional service with Bhagavad Gita and you really side and back to go back to the devotional Dharma. With Yudhishthira Maharaj being exemplary as one specifically responsible for establishing Dharma and Dharma as principles, is there exclusivity, for example, like with someone like Yudhishthira Maharaj, I would assume he's on that pure devotional platform, but he doesn't really need to perform sadhana bhakti, or he doesn't really need to perform even dharma. So is there exclusivity, or is there not exclusivity? If someone is on that pure devotional platform, does that exclude the performance of these other
mundane
activities?
Uh-huh, okay.
You know, especially in this material world. And also, and then in the spiritual world, how is that reflected?
Mm-hmm.
Or if it is at all.
Okay. So a question comes up that the piety then manifests by Yudhishthira Maharaj, now he's a pure devotee, but a pure devotee doesn't have to manifest these. So then, how does the application of piety and pure devotional service come into play? Because we see in Vaikuntha also, everything's rules and regulations, but it's not considered piety. But here, rules and regulations are piety. So he's performing them here, so is it a transcendental activity or is it a mundane activity? Would that?
Yeah, and also there's one, if someone is on the pure devotional platform, is there a necessity of excluding the...
Okay, so if one is on the pure devotional platform, does one have to exclude the performance of the regulated devotional service or pious activities like that? Okay, so one thing is there that's very important. Pure devotional service is a generic term that starts from the Madhyamadhikari, from Nishta, goes through the Uttamadhikari up to the Prema Bhakti. All three are considered pure devotees. So it's a very broad term, pure devotee. The neophyte can be a pure devotee, but is not by definition a pure devotee. A Madhyama is a pure devotee. An Uttama is a pure devotee. But a neophyte may or may not be a pure devotee, depending upon his motive. Like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see neophyte devotees whose motive is only to please Krishna, so they're called neophyte pure devotees. And we see as the devotees at Prabhupada's time, because of their commitment to Prabhupada's instructions and mission without any consideration for themselves, Prabhupada considered them pure devotees. Right? Whether they were neophyte or whether they were Madhyama. Now, then, so when we go up, then within prema, then you also have then basically two divisions. You have the pure devotee, which is Vaikuntha, and you have the pure unalloyed devotee, which is Braja. Does that make sense? So when for us, when we say Vaikuntha, it can be used in two ways. It can either specifically be meant that the Vaikuntha planets, where the 24 Vaikuntha Murtis are the deity, or if we're talking in a generic way, Vaikuntha, we generally use the term Dwarka to mean Vaikuntha, because Vaikuntha is an expansion of Dwarka. Because Dwarka is where the five rasas are fully manifest, but at the same time it's based on rules and regulations. So the principle of Vaikuntha is rules and regulations. That's the main. But there the awe and reverence becomes the prominent, while in Dwarka it's not the prominent. But it's still, so when we say Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, Dwarka then includes Vaikuntha. Like that. Does that make some sense? Like that. So it can be used. So pure unalloyed devotional service, then within the service, then those activities aren't done. But for, as preaching, where one comes to the Mandima platform, one does acts externally like a pure devotee. In other words, the Nitya Siddhas, who are pure unalloyed devotees, when they come down to preach, they come and they act as a pure devotee. So they follow the sadhana. But for Vaikuntha, the sadhana and the love is synonymous. Where the sadhana is the expression of one's love. So there's no difference. Because that love comes through the medium of rules and regulations. That's what makes the difference. Even you're worshipping Radha and Krishna, but if rules and regulations are your main focus, that's what's important to you, rather than just Krishna's pleasure, then Dwarka is generally, the doors to Dwarka are opened. Or there are forms of Vrindavan that have that mood of Dwarka, but they look like Vrindavan. Like that. I think Vishwanath or Baladev explains them. Like that. Is it something? He explains, it's like Radharani flies on a swan airplane with 10 million maidservants to meet Krishna for the rasa dance. So it has the opulence and that formality of Dwarka, but it's Vrindavan pastimes. So that's pure devotional service. The pure unalloyed, that is the Braja Bhakti that is talked about by the Acharyas. Therefore they say the devotion to the son of Maharaj Nanda. And these other, because in these other ones, Nanda Baba may or may not be involved. Like the Nimbarkas and that, he's not involved. Right? They're worshippers in Vrindavan. They follow spontaneous devotional service. But they don't, Radha and Krishna never leave the kunjas. Right? So there's no separation. So the intensity of rasa isn't as great as the Gaudiya line. So there are different things depending on your mentality. So that's why I said it's very rare. It's never been given before. It's very rare. Braja Bhakti is so rare. So it can't be taken lightly. It's based on you desire it, you get it. You don't desire it, you don't get it. But generally you don't desire it unless you perform activities that purify the heart and put you in association with the devotees. And the name and the Bhagavatam and like that. So by doing those activities, then one wants that because they want it. You see in the Bhagavatam, they want it. The devotees you associate, they want it. So therefore then by association, you want it. That's why it's important. Right? So that's why sadhana is performed, because it will put you in association with those who have that. And even you're in that association, like Prabhupada has that, so something magical wears off, but you may not be conscious of what it is because the heart's impure. Right? So then, by performing the devotional activities, the heart becomes purified, then you can appreciate it. You appreciate what you have. Right? So we see is when Krishna creates that separation, it purifies the heart. And in that, then one starts to take stock of one's values. And you see, then Krishna is what's most important. So therefore, then you start to want Krishna. So does that make some sense? So the whole thing is attachment to Krishna. That's what the whole process is. But that's not overemphasized. It's emphasized as that, attachment to Krishna. but that all the everythings are and it's a said that all things are for that. But technical analysis of it, that it's not really the sadhana. It's that you're doing it to please Krishna. Except for chanting the holy name. Those are eternal principles. The other things are, because otherwise the tendency is, because of the impersonal and fruitive mentality, will give them up. Oh, if it's not going to get me pure devotion, I won't do it. No, but that's your medium for getting it. But we're not that sharp, right? Because fruitive activities are pretty straightforward. I do the activity, I get it. You know, and impersonalism is it's on the mundane platform. Why should I do it? Because I don't want to stay in the material world. I want no material result, right? So they won't take, the Prabhupada says, you know, the person says, you go to give money, they put their hands behind their back. The Prabhupada says, no, hey, give me all the money, I'll take it. Because they're going to use it for Krishna. So devotee is not afraid of the material result that comes from performing sadhana bhakti, because he's just going to engage in the Lord's service. The impersonalists don't want to do it because they'll get a result and then they got to deal with it. Devotee's not afraid of it. They'll deal with it. They'll get it. They'll use it for Krishna. For the karmis, they'll only do it because they're going to get the result. So here we're talking about neither. You're not doing it to get the result, right? And you're not afraid of the result. You can deal with the result without attachment. So this is something we've never done before in history of our being in the material world. We either work for the result or we don't work because we don't want a result. But here we're working not for the result. So it's something new. So because it's so different and it's so ununderstandable, therefore we identify with the body, with the activities, with the results. So therefore, then since that's the identity, take it, use it for Krishna. But at some point, to avoid problems that arise from that identity, then it has to be pointed out occasionally. You know. So that's the weakness. Technical analysis is useful in that it makes one give up one's attachment to the material. Take up the process of detachment. But the problem is it also is because of that connection of detachment, one may also be wary of engaging results in Krishna's service. So it has its limit also. The limit is Sarup. Once one comes to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, it's finished. Technical analysis is over. It's only to get you out of the material world. You know, it is the second thorn that you take the first one out with. Like that. So once the first one's taken out, you drop the second one. You know, you don't keep it. You hold on to it. You get attached to it. Then you'll come back again. So you're not going to get the first one out without the second one. You know, but you can't get attached to it. So that's the whole thing. It's a very delicate point. So it's only brought out now and again just to make us aware and to make us conscious, and so we can start to think and analyze and see things in perspective. But it's not overemphasized because it also has, it's a very dry flavor. You know what I'm saying? Because it's connected to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized. But the taste is dry. That's why when you get to the spiritual platform, the activities that we see the karmi do and the lifestyle the karmi lives is what they're doing in the spiritual realm, because that's where rasa is tasted. Impersonalism, voidism, liberation, there's no taste. That's the thing, there's no taste in liberation. It's just a great idea, but there's no taste. Taste is in activity and the results of activity. Right? But we don't want people to get attached to material activity and its results. So therefore, we emphasize naishkarmya. But in that, we also don't want to overemphasize that. Where that's seen as important, we don't get to the platform of bhakti. So in other words, it's like each step you take, you can't get attached to where you've just come from. Right? Otherwise, you're not going to get... You drive up in your car, then... You won't get out of your car. No, you have to get out of the car. Then you walk up the steps. If you stay on the steps, you're attached to that. You're not going to get in the building. So your goal is to get in the building, but you use the car as long as the car is useful. When it's not useful, it's given up.
When the steps are useful, that's used. And when those are finished, then it's given up. So the same way, karma and jnana are both used. That's jnana yoga and karma yoga. But they're both different aspects for us of naishkarmya. It's just whether the emphasis is more on the karma or more on the jnana. Like that. But in either case, the point is the result is given to Krishna. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
Anything else? If you have attachment for your devotional service?
If you have attachment for your devotional service. Oh, okay. Means if we're attached to the particular service itself, then is that okay? Because then we're saying is that we have so because we've heard that service and Krishna are non-different, so then can we be attached to the service? So the point is that attachment to serving Krishna, that is fine. Until we come to the platform of Baba, being attached to the service is also not a problem. Though there'll be two stages. One is we're attached to the service because it gives a result that we like. More advanced than that is we're just attached to that service because it's close to our conditioned nature and it's comfortable for us to perform. But the result is not what we're interested in. But eventually it comes to the platform where then we become attached to rendering service through the devotees. Our service is serving the devotees. So the devotees become the most important. Like that. So it's a natural progression that they will happen. So being attached to the service is okay as long as you see that it doesn't get in the way of your relationships with devotees and stuff.
Okay, the more important service is serving the devotees?
Means the more important is to please the devotees, yes, because service, that's why we're doing something, is to please the devotees. That's the whole point. We don't have any other purpose. Like that. Therefore, we rent a service. Okay?
Just a quick clarification question. The principle of the devotee not being afraid of the material result, is this synonymous with dovetailing? Is this the process of dovetailing one's material desires into devotional service?
Uh-huh, okay. So the question is dovetailing, is that the meaning of the result is engaged in the Lord's service? But it was in relationship to not being afraid of the result. So here we have a combination between the approach from karma yoga and the approach from jnana yoga. Jnana yoga tends because of the mode of goodness, one doesn't want any trouble. So one tends to avoid anything that would give trouble. So sometimes the results of an activity may be seen as trouble. So that's coming because of jnana. Attachment to results, that's coming because of karma. Right? So when we are not attached to the results, but we perform it to please Krishna, then that will be higher. Right? That'll be jnana yoga. But we have to be very careful that we don't avoid the service because it gives a result that we don't want to deal with. Right? If it's our duty to deal in that area. Right? If it's not our duty, then we don't get involved. Right? Does that make sense? You know, like, one takes up family life because one doesn't mind dealing with the results of those activities. One doesn't want to deal with the results of those activities, then you can take up, you know, one doesn't have to get married. Right? Because they're bona fide paths. They're complete in themselves that they will work. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, it's not one excludes the other. Right? It's not that being afraid of the result doesn't mean that it's not that someone is not afraid of the result because they want the result and want to deal with it. You know, that's the beginning stage. But one can have a platform, one's not afraid of the result because one wants to use it for Krishna.
It's ideal.
Yeah, that's ideal. But this is a progress. The whole point is know that these are the options. Start wherever you're at and progress forward. And wherever it's at, don't be afraid to acknowledge it. Probably the biggest obstacle to advancement is not identifying or not agreeing to identify and accept where we are at in our devotional service. Right? To everybody, you're so advanced. No, I'm this, I'm that, I'm so many things. But in the back of your mind is, I'm advanced. I've been here so many years, I'm in this position, I've done so much, I've given so many classes, I'm advanced. So if someone deals with you in a way that seems inappropriate for our idea of our level of advancement, we get very upset. Right? We get upset. So that's just Krishna pointing out to us that, you may be advanced, but don't let your idea of being advanced be an obstacle. Because he doesn't sit around thinking, I'm God. That's for Vaikuntha. In Braja, they don't think. He thinks he's God, neither does anybody else think he's God. And even if he is, who cares? He can be God or not. Who cares? It's just like, the mother, the prime minister. It's like, he can be the prime minister, shmime minister. Doesn't matter. But, he's going to eat his lunch on time and take his rest and, quit, and make sure he's, wearing his socks and, he's warm enough when it's cold. And, it doesn't matter. He can be whoever he is. Doesn't matter. I'm his mother. And he's going to dress properly and take care of his health. Right? Does that make sense? So that's Braja. Even if he is God, so what? Nice. Great. Okay. Are we going out to the fields? Or, where are we meeting for the Rasa dance? Or Mother Jashoda, eat, Okay, you're God, you can eat more, so eat for heaven's sake. Does that make sense? Was that a form of name dropping? Okay, I'm just joking. So was telling you about this. They were in England, in London. So, I was having lunch in Paris with such and such, and then that's one level. You say the name. Then the next level. I was having lunch with such and such this morning, right? And you're in London at lunch. Having email this morning.
At the moment, they're not really able to, in their desire to seek honesty in their spiritual life, they have to admit they can't accept the dress, the culture, the food, everything about Krishna consciousness. They can accept the spiritual ethics, which have basically separated the culture from what they call the spiritual ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And say that in their search for honesty, or they desire the honesty about where they're at in spiritual life, they're more comfortable with just the Western culture that they were brought up in, the dress, the food, the style of living, and that's how they stay within their spiritual life. Is that...
Can it be accepted as a platform of honesty?
Yeah, of course, in one way it is, but Bhaktivinoda says that, I think it's from Chaitanya Chaitanya, even in two families, two brothers are completely different, and their approach to Krishna will be different. It might take form of different dressing and a different whatever. So, what does it depend on the different countries? Their approach will be different. The honesty goal is agreed upon, then those differences are details, but are those details, are they actually a symptom that the principle isn't accepted?
Oh, okay. If the detail is not followed, does that mean the principle hasn't been accepted?
Yeah, obviously there's some kind of contamination there in the thing. That's how I see it. On the one hand, I can see that this person is I can respect them 1,000% for what they're doing. But on the other hand, I think it must
must be that there's something there that they're not accepting, that they can't understand, that dressing a certain way is pleasing to Krishna. That this whole culture is what Krishna created so that we can approach him. Mm-hmm. So it's like a rejection of some part of the philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time they're saying that this is what they have to do to maintain the spiritual essence. So it's mm-hmm. like there becomes this division between the culture and the spiritual
mm-hmm.
essence.
Okay.
So that seems to me like they're considering that
the detail. Okay. So the question then comes up is, to follow spiritual essence, does it actually require any particular application of detail? Does it need to be traditional? Can it be non-traditional? Can it be whatever we like? You know? So... Then we come to the, okay, means to be, one element would be here, is, okay, we started off with honesty. That's where it starts from, being honest and seeing one's own position. Okay, now, just kind of, let's try to get these in a nutshell. So then, honesty means honesty with oneself. So now one has to be very honest in that one's honesty doesn't bleed over into others. When one starts preaching that this is honesty, that's dishonesty. Right? When you start saying, I can't follow the Vedic, I can't relate to it, I'm following the Western and I'll just stick to the spiritual essence. That's okay, that's their life, but if they preach that that's valuable for others and that's what others should do, or for people who are able to follow it that that's dishonest, that's bogus. That's atheistic. Means, okay, the, yes, but... Yeah, yeah. No, no, it's there. It means we're just... That's one option. We'll get to that in the next points. Then you have the principle in detail, is that the principle has to be obtained in following the detail. Otherwise, the detail has nothing to do with the principle. So now if they're saying we're following the spiritual essence... But we're following the detail of Western culture. First, they would have to be able to say what is the essence, and they would have to be able to prove how each and every item of Western culture that they follow is attaining that philosophy. You know what I'm saying? They would have to prove what it is. Just to give an example, let us say dress. The Vedic culture then... You have the Vedic, what they wear, that's the most comfortable. At the same time, it's the most high class. It's the most refined, gentle, practical. So you're taking all these things. It's cultured, it's high class, it's refined, it's very practical if you know how to deal with it. So that's the essence of the Vedic cultural dress. What essence like that is there in the West? It can't be streetwear because it's not refined, it's not cultured. It may be comfortable, it may be practical. A lot of streetwear is not practical, it's too tight to be comfortable. You know? So then what is the purpose of that streetwear? To attract sensuality for sense gratification. So therefore that detail doesn't work. Okay, let us look at something else. Let's take, okay, most refined, then let's see. If they want to be the most refined, then they start getting out the tuxedos. You know, stuff like that. Those are okay, not so comfortable. Okay. Kind of also basically refined and all that, is gentle and all that, then is, what do you call it? A three-piece suit. Also has an element of being not always as comfortable. Then, okay, down from that, then you'd have to get into, I don't know exactly what the name is, but it's kind of like business casual. Like that. That's comfortable, it looks good for most situations. But from your experience, how many of those Western devotees who don't follow the Vedic culture dress always in business casual? They don't have the refinement. So, even they're saying they're following the essence of the principle. Prabhupada said, if you don't dress as a devotee, you want to wear kami clothes, dress as a fine, up-to-date in American gentleman. So that means business casual, or if it's more formal than a suit, more formal than that, a tuxedo. Right? He said gentleman, up-to-date gentleman. So when he's in his house, he's not known as a gentleman. He's known as a gentleman when he's on the street. Then you can say you're getting the essence. Then food. Okay, you have the food. Why is this? Why and to go beyond it, this is what Krishna likes to wear. So therefore, it's pleasing to Krishna. We don't see Krishna in these other things. You know? Like that. So the thing is it's not that it can't be done, but the point is generally that platform is reserved for those who are more new. Because once you get to the point where you're more advanced, then the analytical aspect comes in. Then, since they're intelligent and they're analyzing, they have to be able to analyze to this degree. That's what Krishna says in the second canto. It has to be analyzed up to this. Where you're starting from where you are up to Krishna, and in between there has to be a direct analytical progression that you can connect anything. There can't be any gap. That's one of the meanings of that verse, of the Chatur Shloki. Is Krishna is in everything. You have to be able to see it. So how is he in dress? He's in dress is because dress is a social statement. How you interact. What is your identity? How you relate to people. How they relate to you. So what is that identity? So you have to find that. If I'm just saying that that's what it is, if one finds uncomfortable in that, one wants dressed a more in a relaxed way than that, great, do it. But what's the connection? How is it pleasing to Krishna? Other than, then you have to say, okay, I'm wearing some clothes so that I'm at least decent, and decency is one of the purposes of clothes, so by my wearing this, then I'm attaining that aspect of the devotional wear. Something has to be attained. You can't attain nothing. Otherwise, how is it the spiritual essence? I'm keeping to the spiritual. What is that essence? Okay, I chant. I take prasad. You know, I read some books. Okay, that's okay. But what about everything else you do? You go home. You're a furniture. Why it's that? You know, the way you do your house, the colors, what's in what room. What you decided, how you cook, how you eat, your bedroom, your bathroom, you know, your all these things. How is it? Where's the spiritual essence in it? It can be found, but if they're going to be so philosophical and say we speak to the essence, like they're getting to the essence and everybody else is distracted, then let's talk essence. Where is the essence? Why? Let's go through your kitchen. We'll pull out every last utensil you have. And we're going to have to hear some philosophy, practical and direct, on why that piece is in your kitchen. If you can't explain it, then let's be honest. You don't know what is essence. So you know some essence. I'm following some essence in my life. You know, and the most essential, of course, chanting Hare Krishna, reading Bhagavatam, associating with devotees. That is the most essential. It's the most powerful. I have faith in it. That's all the more I can do. But then don't put yourself that you're a great jnani and that you've got the essence. Just say that I've heard from the acharyas. This is it. I'm so far. I can't relate to anything else. It doesn't make sense. But I have faith in devotees, the name, serving the deity, hearing the books and all that. But probably the person who said that doesn't. So, if they have that, that's honest. And they'll go back to Godhead. Because they've caught the essence, but they're so simple, they can't get more than that. It doesn't matter. If one is very simple, the point is his body, mind, and words is fully engaged. And if the body, mind, and words is fully engaged, it doesn't matter how simple it is. The Prabhupada said the gopis aren't great philosophers. Just, they're completely surrendered. That's all it takes. If you have intelligence, it's got to be engaged. That's the meaning of words. Words means intelligence, right? Prabhupada says you tell a fool when he speaks. So that's how the symptom of intelligence is what you speak. So when we say body, mind, and words, then words means the intelligence. Like that. So then what I have to say is it has to be connected. It's okay. Because we see is that because the process is transcendental, it doesn't matter. You don't have to change anything. But you shouldn't have a philosophy that this is perfect. No, it's not perfect. You know? And even if you want to take it, let's take it there. There's a problem going this way. Let us just reverse it. Let's go into their Western culture and that they're used to and just go into it the other way. Instead of trying to pull it out into the trend, let's go into it. Where did it come from? Why do they dress in that way? Go back 100 years. Who dresses in a way that you call a gentleman? Right? A good Christian gentleman. So it comes from religion. Why do women cover up? Religion. Either Judaism, Christianity, Islam. Something, that's where it comes from. So all the aspects of their culture are coming from that. So even then, so then it's a matter of they're following a religious process, but they just don't want to follow the Vedic religious process. They're accepting the Vaishnav philosophy and whatever their cultural background, Judaism or Christianity or whatever it is that they were before. And even say, oh, we don't accept any of that. Then the street culture, but where does that come from? That's created by the businessman, the consumer culture, to get you to spend money. So you enjoy your senses and you go out and make money. It's still a philosophy because if it doesn't get you sense gratification, if it doesn't get you money, you don't do it. The girl does not go out on the street in a tight tank top if it doesn't get her profit. She's not going out there. Guaranteed. But it gets profit, therefore she does it. The day it doesn't get profit, she's not wearing it. Same with the boy. You're not going to spend $100 on some crazy, you know, running shoes if it doesn't get you a result. No one's out there running, right? One guy named Jordan is running. Everybody else is just wearing them and cutting a profile. But for that $100, they get back more than $100 in return. You know, in the way of appreciation, or they become part of the group, or it gets them something, somebody appreciates it, it gets them some profit. Otherwise, and it's got to be more than the money they paid for it. If it's not, then they feel it was a waste of time. So therefore, that's the religion. Economics and sense gratification. Artha and Kama is the religion. If you look at it deeper, so it has some emotional content, then it has religious. So it may either be Vedic or non-Vedic. But non-Vedic doesn't go very deep. You're like, the Jews can say, this is our diet based on scripture. The Muslims can say that. The Buddhists can say that. The Jains can say that. The Christians can't. There is no such thing as a Christian diet other than you don't eat humans. But that's the meaning. Catholic means very broad. So the diet is also very broad. You know, I think French are also Catholics. You know, so it's right. They eat very broad, more broad than anybody. Their cuisine is much more developed than anybody in Europe. Right? And they eat everything. Right? You know, you go across the river, the British, not so great. They get their peas and potatoes boiled, but that's about it. But it's so the whole thing it comes down to is that where is that essence? It's coming from religion anyway. Any culture is coming from religion. Right? And even nowadays to say Christian, where's it coming? It's come from the pagan. Whatever was Roman paganism and the outlying Germanic paganism, they simply Christianized that. That's the modern culture. In other words, where did it come from? You know, and they make it up as they go. So the whole thing is still based on religion, but it's religion of what? Is it religion meaning religion of the emotions? Is it religion of the religion of sense gratification? Right? Or it may be like the academics, religion of liberation. They couldn't care less how they dress in this, but you do have a basic standard. You know, you got to wear a three-piece suit that doesn't fit. You know, then you can, you know, get liberated. You know, you follow the academic path and get out of here. Right? So
something has to be followed. Some religion is followed. You're either following science, which is based on perception, or based just generally on the senses. You don't bother with the, you know, knowledge acquiring. You just go into the other senses. You know, the working senses. But you follow some religion. You can't get away from religion. Conditioned soul cannot function without religion. So then it's a matter of being honest. What is your religion? So even they say Western, but what aspect of Western? Western is very broad. What does that mean, Western? You know, are they putting on their colors and getting on their chopped Harley and riding down the street? I doubt it. There's millions of them. You know, are they putting on their golf shoes and getting their bag and going out and schmoozing with those people and hanging out at that group? Probably not. You know, are they putting on their, you know, kind of, you know, their suits, but, you know, keeping the tie undone and jacket on the shoulder and moving with the politicians and other? Doubt it. You know, are they in with the sports fans and all that and out there? Doubt it. Are they moving with the artists and the, you know, the all that kind of thing like that? Maybe, but probably not. You know, maybe some with a few intellectuals, academics. You know, you might get some, how you say, Jewish, you know, intellectual atheists kind of culture. But still it's Jewish. You know? So It still has some. And so which one? And I've mentioned so many, and these are just ones that come out of America. Europe, we have so many more, and even more refined, or less refined. Go up to head north to, you know, Liverpool, and that gets a little rougher, you know. But you have so much. So which one? When you say Western, which one? Because the universal one is McDonald's, blue jeans, you know, a few of these kind of things. Pizza Hut. You know, there's something you find everywhere. But otherwise, you go into each region has its own thing. So when they say we just want to fit into what? So if they're being honest, define it. Exactly what? Or if they don't have that kind of intelligence, don't bother. But then don't be professing it to others. Because it said if it's bogus, someone who follows that bogus philosophy will have trouble themselves. Someone who preaches it will get 100 times the reaction, what they get from following it themselves. Like that. And that's Shastra, so that's what happens. It's not a matter, we're devotees, it doesn't matter. No, this Shastra is written for devotees. So the point is being honest means this is where I'm at, this is what I can do, this is how much I can connect to Krishna. I'm willing to do that. And that takes up X amount of my day, so that's good. And I know that with time it'll increase because the process is so powerful. But to say, I'm fine and this is all the better it needs to get, then that's not honest. Because the soul, if we're really honest, the soul belongs to Krishna. It doesn't belong here. You know, so it's got to be open that in my conditioned nature now I can't really relate to it, I can't get into it, but I'm sure that when I come to the pure transcendental platform, I'll have no problem with it. Because I haven't noticed in the scriptures, I mean, I haven't read that broadly, but that in any of the past times that, you know, one of the cowherd boys shows up in a pair of Levi's jeans. You know, or, you know, one of the gopis shows up in, you know, a miniskirt or, you know, stuff like that. I had never heard of it. So maybe it's there. Well, excuse me, I take that back. The tribal girls from the other side of Govardhan, they show up not well dressed. Yeah, you know, the chest is hanging out and the whole thing. Yeah, they're like that. So tribals, but Krishna doesn't touch them like that. They always goof, but they always say, okay, we'll wager a bet. Whoever wins, whoever loses, then has to, you know, be kissed by the other person. So then Radharani says, yes, I accept. And Bringy here will accept the kiss on my behalf. Like Bringy's the Aboriginal girl, like that. So it is true. They do have them there. They're called Aborigines. So there is a spot.
There is a spot. But the point is, one has to be open. Otherwise, then one will get develop, like we mentioned before, that indifference then may create some problems. See, what happens is you don't worry about it. So the person comes new. He's a business person. He comes to the temple because he wants to dress properly. He dresses in his suit. He takes up chanting. He chants at his home. He offers his food. He does stuff and this and that. But it's not that he's against the idea. He may feel uncomfortable or this, or he wouldn't want to wear it. But it's not that he's against it. He's not comfortable with it. That's okay. And with time, he may get more comfortable. You might find him once or twice putting on a dhoti at a festival, and the rest of the time he'll go back to his regular clothes. But it happens, and we see it in the temples. The guy's been coming around for 20 years, and you know, he's there, and he's a nice guy, does nice service. And occasionally, it's not that he's getting, but he's more comfortable in his own way. But if you have someone who's against the principle, then you have a devotional, that's an anartha, and that's going to block their devotional service. One has to remember, one takes birth in the Dham because of being a devotee. And we have to remember that there are Muslims born here in the Dham. You don't get born here if you're not a devotee. But those are devotees who aren't interested in the scriptures, aren't interested in following the principles. They'll follow other principles, but not. But they're devotees. Just like the dogs are the devotees, the bugs are the devotees, they're all devotees. Right? So that has to be remembered. You know, it's that it's there. Because they're devotees, they're dear to Krishna, so they take birth. They're not going to just take birth out in a karmi place. They got to be someplace like that. But still, you see, they're chanting Hare Krishna. They come around. They don't mind coming and doing something. That they wouldn't do it if they didn't have to. It means they have a job in the temple. They're there. They're respectful. Things like that. I've even seen a few of them offer obeisances when they really think times are rough. I've seen one Muslim guy come up, plunk 100 rupees down in front of our deities, do full dandabats before he went to court. I've seen him do it. You know, that's why there was the Bangladesh wars, because the Pakistani Muslims said that the Bengali Muslims weren't Muslim; they were Hindus. Like that. That's why they had the war. So then, you know, it's all food for thought. So let's be honest. That's true. You know, honesty is important. If one identifies, but identify completely means, I would say, is you have to take it where you hit the bottom, that you know this is it. I don't like to go below this because I can't relate to it by my conditioned nature, but I'm having trouble going above this because of my conditioned nature. Then you know right where you are, because everybody has their limits on everything, even the grossest person, except Jagai Mata. They were special. That's why they were so special. They had no limits. But otherwise, you know, even the roughest guys, you know, it's like, you know, they'll kill anybody, but they won't kill kids. You know, things like that. You get it. You know, it's like if you go to a prison. You know, someone who's sexually abused kids, he runs a good chance of being killed by the other prisoners, even though they've done, nobody like, because everybody has their limits, you know, on what it is. So it's, you know, it's, generally, you'll see people do something because they figure their own limits have been crossed. The other person has crossed their limits of what they call justice. Maybe right or wrong, it's their own interpretation, but therefore, then there's all these things. You know? So then you can relate to understand that more than people who don't care for anything. You know? Does that make some sense? Yeah, so it's like, they have to see where that is. What is the bottom? You know, what is keeping you from going forward? Then you know where you are. Because if you know where you are, then you know, and you know where you're getting to, then you can make a straight line. Right? Because otherwise, if you don't know where you are, how do you draw the line to know where you go? Because in any pay, if you're not following a path, then it's not very efficient. Right? Because then you have a standard. Okay, then you wear these. What do you wear? You know, we get up in the morning, we know what we wear. So there's no big distraction. You know, like that. But otherwise, if you don't, then how do you know? Because then one time you go to a thing, you buy all these clothes, and then that goes out of fashion, you buy that, and then... But certain things don't go out of fashion. Like we mentioned before, they've been wearing, you know, these crazy tuxedos. Those are, what, in the 1700s, like that. Maybe 1800s, I think. 1800s. You know, the three-piece suit goes back, what, to the 20s, 30s? Like that. The ones that we use now, you do those longer coats, you can take it back to the 1900s. You know, generally only what ladies wear those coats, but whatever. You know, or you take the business casual, that goes back a few more years. You know, back to the 50s. You know, the Bohemians, I think, started that. You know, so, but it still works. It doesn't go out of fashion. On the street, pleats go in and out. But in the casual wear, it doesn't. You can wear them or not wear them. You know, we have two buttons or three buttons. It comes and goes, but otherwise, then the other, it doesn't. So that's the thing. It's more efficient. You're going to spend your money. You're going to look good. And you know, after 10 years, if you haven't gotten too fat, you can still wear it. You know, like that. But anything else, 6 months, it's out if you want to keep up on the cutting edge. You know, if your point is to impress people and have proper interaction, then what are you going to do? You've got to spend bucks. The other one, you spend a little money and then it's there. So the point is even in there, whose money is it? If it's Krishna's money, the essence is, if we're getting essence, then the money's Krishna's, then why waste it? You got to buy clothes, so buy something that's going to last. You know what I'm saying? There's so many ways to approach. So even, and there are Westerners who think like this. Right? You know this Bhatta shoes? So the Bhatta guy, he said, I'm too poor to buy cheap things. Because something cheap falls apart. I'll buy something that's good enough that it lasts. Maybe not luxurious, but I'll buy something good. Right? You go, all these old families that have a tradition, and that tradition will come from some religion. They're very expert at dealing with material energy. Like that. People who don't have any tradition, they're the guys that are getting taken for the ride by the guys that do. Right? Like that. Does that make some sense? Like that. So we don't mind. We have no problem. We don't care how anyone dresses, how anyone does. It doesn't matter. As long as they're trying to connect it to Krishna and they're not making a philosophy out of it that what they're doing at this stage is the perfection. It may be a step on the way to their perfection, and if someone's in the same mentality, it may be valuable for them. But it's not something you preach. You have to preach the eternal standard. And then you come as close to that as possible. You know? Does that make sense? So that's then you're getting to the essence. But otherwise, if you make it and no, this is that, and the Western, what's wrong, we don't need, that's Indian, that's also a standard one. That's pretty lame. Because that Indian goes back to 5,000 years ago when Krishna was here. So if you want to just call Krishna Indian, then yes, we're Indian. You know what I'm saying? The dhoti and the rice and dal was the same thing. Duryodhana is complaining that Krishna is going over to Vidura's house and eating, you know, chapatis and spinach when he's offering luxurious cooking. So that chapatis and spinach, if it is Indian, then that makes Krishna Indian. So then we don't mind. You know? So that's the whole thing. They try to say, well, it's Indian and we're American, so Indian and American, they're both national, they're both mundane, so it doesn't matter. No, but the Indians is the reflection, the closest reflection of the Vedic, of the original. So it's not Indian. Otherwise, define Indian. What's Indian? You know what I'm saying? You have Bharat Varsha. This is all that's left of it. You know, Prabhupada says it'll get smaller. You know, but this is what it is. So then it's Bharat Varsha. Bharat Varsha is the place where they follow the Vedic culture. Aryavarta. Technically speaking, the area in very north India to the west, that's the main place. That's where the Saraswat Brahmins are from. Right? Then that expands to bigger where you come down, includes Hastinapur and all that area. Up into Himachal, those areas like that. That's the next best area. bigger than that, then it goes over to like about, I think, Prayag, Varanasi, and that also over. Bigger than that, it extends right across to the Bay of Bengal. So basically, the Bay of Bengal over the Vindhya Mountains and between the Himalayas, over down to the what do you call it, Arabian Sea? What do they call it? Indian Ocean. That side, like that. That's Aryavarta. You know, everything else would follow Vedic culture, but they may or may not be as committed. So as time goes, it'll just shrink back to those. That's all that will be left. Prabhupada said, in the end, all that'll be left of India is UP. You know, everything else will have declared independence and become their own countries. South India means, yes, yeah, South India follows the culture because the Muslims didn't have an influence, but the locals down there consider themselves, they're Dravidians, and they consider all the Brahmins in that to be Aryans. They're from the north. That's why there's always those movements to kick out the Brahmins. Like that. So if they declare independence, it'll be without the Brahmins. You know, because the political parties that make that move are anti-Vedic. They'll follow their Tamil culture, which is, they don't understand, has also come down from somebody from the north, but it goes far enough back, they don't worry about it. So it's, you see in UP, most of the holy places are there, the sacred rivers are there, so many things are there, and they identify, the simple people, they identify, you know, India, Bharat, so that's what would be left at the end. You know, how long it takes to get to that, that's another thing. But, you know, the point is that's all that'll be end. You know, so when Kalki comes around and does his pastime, that's all there's going to be left of what's called India. So the thing is, but the reason it's there is this is mentioned in the Shastras and they follow the Shastras. So that's the point, is that India is someplace, meaning that place where they follow the Vedic literature. Right? Yeah, Vrindavan's in UP. Vrindavan's in UP. Okay. Does that make some sense? Yes, Matthew.
And the question is, one time in the lecture, my Gurudev, Mark Krishna Goswami, said that we should not attach to devotional service. We should attach devotional service, but we should not enjoy the devotional service. So could you explain it?
Could we explain about attachment to devotional service but not attachment to enjoying?
Yeah,
because we had mentioned about being attached to the service is natural. Because there's two elements. There's attachment to the service, which means the expression of our devotion towards Krishna. That's the real service. Then it's done through a medium of some activity. Now, so we're attached to serving Krishna and we're attached to a particular way of serving Krishna, but the results of that we shouldn't be attached to. So that's Naishkarma. So that's what Narad Muni preaches. Narad Muni preaches that we are not attached to the fruit of activity. Does that make some sense? Yeah? Means you're doing a service, okay? Let us say we're selling books. You sell books, then a few things happen. One, you get money. And the more books that go out, the more devotees recognize that you distributed books. Right? So, and the more books you distribute, sometimes more facility is given so that you can do even more books. Right? So we shouldn't be attached to the money we've gotten from selling the books. Right? We shouldn't be attached to the glory that, yes, I distributed so many books. And we shouldn't be attached to the facilities we get from that we've been given because we're doing nice book distribution. Right? And that means today and in the future. It's not also in the future that after 10 years of doing your book distribution, then you say, and you can't do it anymore, then, hey, I did so many years of book distribution, and I was, you know, glorified, I brought in so much money for the yatra, and now, you know, they haven't even given me a room to stay in. No one respects me, I don't have a position.
But then that means you were doing your book distribution for these things. Maybe in retrospect, but still, at the time you may not have been, but now the way you're doing it, then you convert it. And now you want to cash in on it. So one has to, at all times, now and in the future, be very careful to not want the fruit of the result. Then Krishna will take care. I mean, we're all here, we're still alive, you know, for better or for worse.
Well, I'm doing devotional service, I feel very satisfied and very enjoyable. So is this the enjoyment?
Oh, okay. So, okay, the doubt is that when you perform devotional service, it's very nice. Bhagavatam says it's happily performed, joyously performed. So is that enjoyment of the service? No, because that is the result of Krishna being pleased. So Krishna is pleased, so we become pleased. Because we're doing the service to please Krishna. So then we enjoy. That's the whole principle. Enjoyment comes by serving. Right? Krishna serves the devotees serve Krishna. That's where enjoyment comes. Krishna's enjoyment is not just being served. He enjoys that the devotees have that relationship with them, but in response, he reciprocates, which is, he serves. Because he takes care, he protects, he interacts, he... Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So we should probably, I guess, end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Adita Gauru Prenam ki.
Sorry, time.